There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk about the trade war now. It's all hotting up, isn't it? Kicked off on Thursday by Donald Trump, who said this, Brandy.
It is the largest deficit of any country in the history of our world. It's out of control.
That's Donald Trump on China and why he felt the need to introduce or propose tariffs on Chinese goods. The response from China was swift. This is Kui Tiankai, who's the Chinese ambassador to the United States, talking to Bloomberg.
We don't want to have a trade war with anybody. We are still trying to avoid one. But if a trade war is forced on us, we have to fight back.
So it's all kicking off, isn't it? What do we make of this? Is this just saber-rattling, or are we actually going to get a trade war?
I can't see China taking those $50 billion worth of tariffs lying down. I mean, we know when the US steel and aluminium tariffs came in that China came back with $3 billion worth of tariffs of its own. So it responded last time. I think they will respond. The question is, how much of an impact will it have on US goods? I've seen a lot of commentary saying that any kind of tariffs on tech wouldn't be a huge deal, because if you look at the way the tech flows between China and the US, it wouldn't really impact Apple, possibly hit, because they've got a lot of stuff that they're doing in China. But a lot of the big tech companies like Facebook and all the rest of them are actually blocked in China. There's restrictions on a number of those platforms. Tim Cook, interestingly, speaking in China, because he was at a development forum in Shanghai, which would have been a very interesting place to be over the past couple of days if you were a major US CEO, has been calling for calm heads on both sides.
This is, I'm getting the feeling that China are very keen to talk to the States about this. They've lined up about 20-something products that they could add a duty on from the States into China. But the feeling is that they don't actually want to fight a trade war. In fact, the Commerce Ministry, the Chinese Commerce Ministry, said, we don't want to fight a trade war. It's absolutely not afraid, though, of starting one. Betty Wang, who's
starting
an economist...
Starting or responding?
Well, responding, if you like. But, I suppose really a war would be, if they're just an invasion, unless you respond, it doesn't become a war, does it? Betty Wang, who's an economist at ANZ Bank, said China's reaction was relatively mild. From China's perspective, it absolutely does not want to see a trade war. Coming back to a negotiation table is a relatively good result.
Well, I was speaking about this late last week to Harvard professor Mark Elliott. He's a specialist, he's vice provost at Harvard University, a specialist in China and Chinese history. He was here for a Harvard Business School alumni meeting. I asked him for his reaction to the trade war. This is what he had to say.
Well, I don't know how to define it. It seems to me that these kinds of moves, unilateral slapping of tariffs, are never very productive. One has to assume, my assumption is, that this is the beginning of a negotiation, the staking out of a certain beginning of where the conversation will proceed. It's hard for me to imagine that when the consequences of what this could turn into become clear, that things will remain as they presently look. As we have seen in other kinds of statements made about the tariffs on steel, aluminum, around NAFTA, all kinds of things like that.
My sense is that in 5-10 years, this will be a footnote in history, and the emergence of China as a global economy will continue, and there will be no trade war derailing that. Am I being naive? Am I missing something?
Well, I don't think you're being naive. And the train of globalization left the station, in my opinion, left the station about 750 years ago. There may be occasional detours onto sightings, but those will always be temporary. The theme here of an era of deglobalization, I think, is, in my view, perhaps premature to call it an era yet, maybe a moment. I do think that in the long term, what you're describing in terms of the emergence of China as a firmly as a global economic power is very likely. We will, however, need to see the much spoken of reforms of state-owned enterprises in China before we will have a really satisfactory answer to that question, I think.
Two final very quick questions from me. One is President Xi. Is the terms of his incumbency have changed recently? President for life, some people are calling him. Do you share some of the concerns that some Western commentators have raised about this as a model of government?
Well, I think that there are legitimate concerns whenever a major country sets about reforming its constitution, particularly when it does so in such a rapid way. and without much in the way of transparency. So I would say I share the concerns of many people, not just Western commentators, but many people I know in China who are, let us say, concerned about the uncertainty that this introduces. I think everybody had been comfortable with the post-1979 arrangements that had been put in place by Deng Xiaoping and that seemed to have served the country quite well, including President Xi. Many people are asking themselves whether these changes were necessary in order for him to push through the reforms that he's been very successful at doing. Certainly the answer that he's given to himself and to his supporters is, yes, it is necessary. It does leave us, I think, with many questions about the, and given also changes in the last few days, questions about what had been maintained as a relatively clear division, at least formally, between party institutions and state institutions. So the consolidation of President Xi's power is something that's it's an ongoing thing. It's a fact, and the world will have to deal with it, won't it?
My last question is about your historical research. My first degree was in history and my second one was in economics. And drawing the link between your historical research of the Qing dynasty and the present and indeed future of China, I'm fascinated to know what lessons, what parallels we can draw, if any.
Yeah. So I would say, and it's at least something I find endlessly fascinating to think about, there's been so much talk, as I'm sure you're aware, of the rejuvenation or the renaissance, rebirth, the fuxing, as it's said in Chinese, of the great Chinese nation in the last several years. And really a return to looking upon the past as a positive resource and not as a burden. That's something that if you're a historian, on the one hand, you take, great consolation in that after all, the past matters and there's value in history and looking back to understand how you got where you are. At the same time, when history is accorded such importance, particularly when it is accorded such ideological and political importance, then that can have the effect of constricting the ability of scholars to explore different topics freely. And that's, of course, something that all scholars would deplore, because academic research is not supposed to have to pay attention to those sorts of things. Although, of course, we know that in every society, including in the United States and everywhere else, there are always ways in which politics will make its presence felt in scholarship. And perhaps it's more a question of degree. I do think that China today and President Xi is a very historically minded guy. He is quite aware of his place in history, and he is seeking to take, I think anyhow, part of his goal is to return China to a place that it last occupied in the world order in the middle of the 18th century. And since the 18th century is my favorite century, I do see some parallels there in terms of the way in which China serves as the compass for much of what happens in East Asia. But of course, we are in a different era, and it won't be the same as in the 18th century. So comparisons that rely a lot on analogies with the tributary system, for instance, I find mostly tendentious. Even for the 18th century, that only gets us so far in terms of understanding what was really going on in what we might call international relations then. I'm not sure how far it gets us in the 21st century.
And that is Professor Mark Elliott, the Vice President at Harvard University, speaking to our Richard Dean.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.